Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Americans are debating who we are and who we aspire to join us as Americans. And Anchorage is a city where most people come from somewhere else. And so that debate is a little different here. We're such a diverse community. Who are we? Who do we want to be? And who do we want to have part of our community? Well, I think most of us are pretty welcoming. I think we're pretty open-armed about who's here. And that's our topic today. We're going to be talking about Welcome Anchorage, an initiative brought on by my guest, Mara Kimmel, who is the wife of Mayor Ethan Berkowitz, to show the world that Anchorage is a welcoming place. And so that's our topic today. And with us as well, as the First Lady, is Nia Corqueth, who is an immigrant from Ethiopia, who's been in Anchorage about 4 years, 5 years. And she's going to be able to tell us about her experience as coming to Anchorage. Thanks for being here, Niacor.
Thank you.
And Mara, tell me why this was something you wanted to take on. Why was it important to you to sort of say, welcome Anchorage?
Well, I've lived in Anchorage for about 20 years now, and I, since living here, I've been working with Alaska Native tribes and also with immigrants and refugees. And one of the things I noticed is that through the course of my career working with immigrants and refugees, Anchorage was slow to recognize that we had people from all over the world here. And I really don't think it was until about 2014 or 2015 when Dr. Chad Farrell issued his findings, his research, that showed that we are among the most diverse cities in the country. And that really confirmed what I had experienced working with this community, that there are people from all over, but we weren't really quite sure what to do with that and how to do it. And so when the year before Ethan had come into office, the Anchorage Assembly had actually passed a resolution joining a consortia of cities around the country that gathered under the umbrella of Welcoming America. And we became a welcoming community in 2014. So this was just something that we picked up in 2015 and really ran with. Mm-hmm. And it's given us incredible opportunities to do really important research that builds on Dr. Farrell's research. Mm-hmm. So we've been able to document the economic contributions that foreign-born Alaskans have made to our city and to our state.
But in the context of what's happening in the country politically right now, where there's this big anti-immigration thing coming right from the president and from his supporters, are you doing something that's counter to that, or is it not related to that?
It's not directly related to it in that we were doing this well before the president was elected. But I do think that it's really important when we're trying to understand, like you said in your introduction, who we are and who we want to be, it's really important that we understand who's living in our city. And so this project, Welcoming Anchorage, allows us to figure out and to go after the voices of the people that are in our community. Anchorage, as you know, is a city the size of Delaware, and it's way too easy for us to get into our own spaces and places and not interact with people who we don't normally interact with, who aren't part of our daily lives. And so this gives us an opportunity to make sure that all voices are being heard and that everybody has a chance to tell their stories. Mm-hmm. And as importantly, it gives us a chance to show the contributions that people can make to our future. I think that all weaves together a narrative and a story that shows that we have always been an incredibly diverse community and the richness that comes with that. And it's really important in this day when we're having debates about immigration that are very often not based at all in fact and not based at all in our own experiences as a city and a state with being a welcoming community. So the narrative that we've been able to tell, the voices that we've been able to bring out in the community, show that reality in ways that are very fundamentally different than the reality that's portrayed in political.
Right. So is this partly about us changing our self-image? Like when you visualize like who is an Anchorage mm-hmm. resident, you don't necessarily only visualize someone like yourself. And I guess that would be really a message to white Alaskans, right? That you visualize somebody who looks like a whole bunch of different people.
Absolutely. And even you wrote a story that was in yesterday's paper that talked about the economic future of the state. But what I'm not seeing when I hear those kinds of conversations is what are the contributions that immigrants and refugees are making, but also could make if we were to break down the barriers to entry. And I think that this is a sector of our community that we're not fully actualizing. Hmm. And at this point, we can't afford to ignore it. We need all hands on deck. We need to make sure that everybody who's here, who wants to work, who has the skills and expertise that we need in different career fields, has the capacity to work. So it's really important right now so that we avoid what you were describing in your column yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to talk about that more in today's show and to welcome listeners to join us who might have questions, comments. Maybe you disagree, or maybe you came from somewhere else and you want to talk about your experience of coming to Anchorage. Was it welcoming when you arrived, and was it difficult to become part of the Anchorage community? You can join us on the air by calling 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're outside the Anchorage area, you can call toll free at 1-888-353-5752. And email is a great way to reach us as well, hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I'll get those emails right here in the studio and ask my guests. Well, my other guest today is Nia Korkweth, who is originally from Ethiopia. She now has an African market, which is at Boniface in Northern Lights. And has been in Anchorage about 5 years. And she was kind enough, pardon me, to come in today and talk about her experience of coming to Anchorage. And I guess my first question for you, Nia Kor, would be, did you find, I would think from Ethiopia, a very hot place, coming to a very cold place, it would be kind of alien to arrive in Anchorage. Did you find it welcoming? Did you find it comfortable when you got here?
My experience was that... What makes it very welcoming to me is how I find a job. Mm. It was very, very easy to walk in the airplane applications, and this lady was happy to hire me at Fred Meyer. I'm like, oh, okay. So even my children enjoy being here because this is mom, everybody's friendly, and especially in school. Where I go, you saw somebody here yesterday, and then you ran into them again. So I'm like, it must be a very small town or city around that. I didn't know. My only thing I saw was like, there's a lot of mountains, which remind me in Ethiopia, because that's where I grew up. Mm. I was born there in a refugee camp. My parents are originally from Sudan, which is South Sudan now. Uh-huh. And the weather didn't really bother me much because I lived in New York City. We have very uh-huh. harsh winter there as well. Uh-huh. It's a lot of wind. So what made it home for me, it is being comfortable, feeling welcome. Every place where I go, even employment was one of them. People are nice.
That makes me feel so good. Yeah. My heart is like warming up here, because I love to think about Anchorage being a welcoming place. Did you move here directly from New York City?
No,
because New York City is not a very welcoming place. I mean, it's open, it's big, it's exciting, but even I don't feel welcome there.
Okay. That's why I fell in love with Anchorage, because of uh-huh. the experience I have in New yeah. York City. I came from Nebraska.
Oh, wow.
My parents lived in Nebraska, so leaving New York City, came to Nebraska. I stayed there for a year and a half, and I couldn't even get a job to
oh, really?
Support my kid. So my aunt who lived here asked me, why don't you just come and visit? So I said, okay, got a ticket, came here September 14, arrived here. Within 2 weeks, I started going around. We went to church, met friends, and they took me around. And my kid was still there. So I told them, I think you guys are going to like it here. Like, really? Because they don't like the cornfield in Nebraska.
it was flat and boring.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There was nothing to do for them. So
yeah.
When I brought them here, and we met a lot of friends. We made a lot of friends. Even my kid went off to camping without me. They went fishing with friends. And it's like it became part of our home, and we have good family friends here.
That's exciting.
That supported us through.
And there's a little bit of a South Sudanese community here in Anchorage as well.
Yes, yes.
Is that related around the church, or is it related? How does it? I know the people come into the store and meet. I mean, how does the South Sudanese community hold together?
The store now became a place where if you come from outside, and you don't know anybody, because a lot of people, they come here for fishing job. So when they come here and make a stop here in Anchorage, the first thing they want to see is, do we have a place where our people meet? Mm-hmm. And the store is right there, and people come in and they ask for whoever they want to ask for. A lot of people, I know them. Also, they come to, if you have a friend and you stay with, and you want to meet your other friend, you don't know where to get them, that's the store. They will come and sit there, and everybody right. chit-chat and talk and have a yeah. good time.
Yeah, that's neat. So, Mara, do you find in your work that, I mean, obviously there's many different immigrant communities in Anchorage from many, many different countries. Do they all sort of have a place like that where they get together and meet? I mean, are there sort of like, when you're reaching out to people, I know there are Korean churches and there are Alaska Native churches and there's other things like that. Do you sort of have to reach out to all those folks?
Yes. We've often lamented the fact that, there's no easy directory and there's no easy pathway into communities when you're trying to do outreach and trying to make people aware that not only is it a welcome community, but this administration and this government now, this local government, wants to really represent that sense of welcoming too. So as we've unfolded this project, it's definitely hit and miss. We're trying the best we can to reach as many people as we can and as many community connectors as we can, so that we're making sure that we can get our message out as well, and then we can hear back from people. But there's no easy way to do that.
I agree. You know, and it's funny, as a journalist, when I've wanted to reach out to a particular community, it kind of feels funny. You don't like pick up the phone book and say, where are the Hmong people? Where are the Ethiopian people? You can't really do that.
And that's part of the reason and what we want to accomplish here. We just finished up with Welcoming Week, mm-hmm. which was a series of activities designed to bring the community together. And the last event was on Saturday at the museum, in front of the museum. And our hope is that we won't have to go in search of or look in the white pages for people, that when we integrate and get to know each other better as neighbors, we'll just know who to call. And so when you're looking for a story, you can call one person who can then tell you about the other person who can tell you about the next person, and finally you can get where you need to go. But it's establishing those connections. And that's something that I think is also uniquely Alaskan. We are very networked and we're very connected between mm-hmm. rural and urban communities.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that Niyakar said was this sense of welcoming and friendliness, which I think is just part of sort of Anchorage and probably part of the American West, that people tend to be more friendly than the East. But I think also we're a very new community, and we tend to be sort of a nested set of communities within a city that don't often overlap. And it seems like that might be one of the challenges that you're trying to overcome, is there's not that many places where we really encounter one another. I mean, maybe at the grocery store and DMV, but for the most part, a lot of our activities are separate.
That's exactly right. And I think that's reflected in some of the policies that we're seeking to change and enhance in our city so that we can embrace people more easily and integrate people more easily. So a lot of the work that we're doing at the city is to promote language access and to make sure that all of the city services that we know that people need to access are available in a multitude of languages. We're recognizing now, on the heels of Hurricane Harvey and Irma and Maria,
right.
Thank you, that knowing who your neighbors are can make the difference between life and death. And so there's many reasons that we want to connect with one another, because it enriches our cultural life, definitely enhances our economics, but also, too, it's a matter of safety. And as things, climate change and all of those variables are increasing in their impacts around our community, these are connections that we know we need to make in the future. And it just makes us stronger as a city.
The other thing that strikes me is that this is a fairly rapid change that's taken place. Yeah. I was looking at some census statistics that showed that sort of minority numbers in Anchorage were going up, like, it was almost like 1% a year. And so anytime you have very rapid change like that, you have stresses around it. Is that something that you're concerned about? It's sort of the kind of maybe resistance or unhappiness about the way Anchorage is changing and countering that?
I don't know if there's resistance and unhappiness. I think more what it is that we just don't know what's been happening. Mm-hmm. And so until we're highlighting the fact that we've got this diversity, and I referenced Chad's research about the fact of diversity, he's done subsequent research showing the rate of it, that, like you said, we're one of the most rapidly changing cities. So it's a matter of knowing who's here and understanding that we have obligations to our communities, residents, to make sure that people can access basic services. And then in turn, that informs the ways that cities can work and function. So it becomes a big cycle of information sharing, knowledge sharing, and then creating policies that reflect the people who are actually living here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Woolforth. We're talking about the Welcome Anchorage Initiative with Anchorage First Lady Mara Kimmel and Nia Corquith, who's an immigrant from a South Sudanese family, was born in an Ethiopian refugee camp and has settled very successfully here in Anchorage. And we welcome your calls if you'd like to get involved in our conversation. The number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, it's a toll-free number, 888-353-5752. And you can reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Nayakor, you said that you were born in a refugee camp in Ethiopia. I know that Sudan has been at war for decades and decades and decades. Do you remember, I mean, were you old enough to sort of I don't know when you left there, but I mean, sort of, do you remember the scene there?
Of the...
the refugee camp?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what that was like there. It's really hard for us to imagine other than maybe a picture we've seen in a magazine or on TV.
There are many camps. I think there's about the Uganda have camp, Kenyan have camp, and also Ethiopia have camp, which is where I was born. That camp, that's also the same place where the rebel leader reside.
Oh, wow.
And it makes it very difficult for the refugees to live safely. And also they have this ethnic clashing between the group, the Nuer and Dinka, and they kept on clashing, even though both group have the same cows. So my memory is like running for your life. Every day you go to bed and something will break out. Gunshots everywhere, you run away, maybe you'll spend a night in the bushes and come back in the morning, safe. It's like you just live like in God's hand. Huh. If I survive, I survive. If I don't, you go. Even though it is a refugee camp, and the Ethiopian government tried it to make it a safe place, but it wasn't, because it's mixed with the soldier and the refugee. And these people fight back and forth. And the innocent people died every day.
Oh, my gosh. So as a child, you are kind of growing up in a world of fear, in a world of not knowing what might happen the next day. And I can hardly imagine what that's like.
That's right.
Yeah. So how old were you when you finally got out of there?
I was 10.
Okay. And how did your family sort of make the escape?
My father had a disagreement with John Garang, the very first group rebel leader, because my father group, they're the one who started. They started with the first group called Anyanya 1, and then came Anyanya 2. There's a guy named Samuel Gaitud. So after John Garang came into Ethiopia in 1983, they had differences with first with tribe, mm-hmm. second power. So John Garang had the upper hand. He's educated. He was a colonel in Sudan. So he took over the power. Mm-hmm. And my father had a disagreement with him.
And so then he was in grave danger.
So he left the camp, came to a city called Gambela. At first, they put him in prison for 8 months. They tortured him in a place called Bilpam, where I was rescued at first. Mm-hmm. Then he took my dad there for 8 months, and he was pulled out by Ethiopian government. Mm-hmm. So that's when he took all of us and came to Addis Ababa, 1987.
Okay. And then was there a refugee program that allowed you to get to the United States?
It was through the refugee program. It was funded by the United Nations.
And in a sense, like the U.S. is rescuing your family from the situation where you are in such grave danger.
And that's true.
And that's what the program is for, I guess, is for people who face death or great danger because of their political views.
Yes. We lived in Addis for more than 7 years. And then my father was given a chance to bring his children to the United States through a program they call a resettlement program. Mm-hmm. And he went through the interview, the process, and was able to bring us to the United States in 1995.
1995, so you've been here almost 20 years, which explains why you speak very, very good English. Yeah.
That's right.
And you've really settled in and become an American. Have you gotten citizenship, or what is your...
In 2000, I got my citizenship. The very first day, I did my oath the very first day when President Bush was elected.
Uh-huh. That's great. So yeah. You're a proud American now.
Yeah. Yes.
I just, it's sort of like, I feel proud as an American that we got NERCOR out of there, right? And that she got to live.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, right now at this moment in time, there are more refugees on the planet than at any other time in our history. This is not an issue that's going away, and it's really unfortunate that the U.S. is now limiting the number of refugees that it's accepting by at least half. Mm-hmm. I will also say that there are people who are not able to avail themselves of going through the refugee resettlement program, but who find themselves in really similar situations. And I'm thinking most specifically of the Salvadoran community and places in Central America where there is war and violence and torture, and the horrible things that NERCOR described are also happening to others. And what's really important, I think, is that we as Anchorage residents need to understand that these are the people that we're brushing elbows with, that are our friends and our neighbors. And oftentimes, and I'm very grateful for her sharing her story, because oftentimes we don't hear those stories and we don't understand the true depth of what makes a person want to come here and how important it is that we have these opportunities for people to find safety and to find a sense of a welcoming community. Because imagine what it's like to go from living in a refugee camp to a place that you feel welcome and wanted, mm-hmm. and safe.
Right. It's almost like welcoming a soldier home from war. It's not an easy transition to make from war to peace. And these are people who are doing it as children in some cases. Yeah. Well, let's take a call from Wasilla. Joe is calling. Joe?
Yes, I just wanted to mention that I arrived in Anchorage with my family. My firstborn was 6 weeks old, drove up the Alcan. We arrived in May, and I think I got my utilities hooked up in about June, and then received a letter in the mail welcoming me and my family to Anchorage. And I believe it came from the Chamber of Commerce, but that welcoming goes way back.
You're right. Anchorage has always been fairly welcoming. Yeah, I think that's partly because we're kind of a frontier town, and we kind of have always wanted more people here, right?
Well, it was a different community back then, so there wasn't quite the divide in the community like there is now, because I lived in Mountain View, I lived in Spinard, and it was just different communities, and they sort of blended together. There's a lot of different divide there now.
You feel like the community is more divided now than it was in those days? Because when I look back, I mean, that was a very transient community, a very young community, a lot of new people coming up for work on the pipeline and that kind of thing. And I would say maybe not very well connected, but you think it was?
Well, I think that the communities seek out their own boundaries, but... back in those days, very few streets were paved. Most of them were gravel. And so there was just more of kind of like pioneer type of thing, where there really wasn't a separation or the divide in the communities. There definitely was a difference between Mountain View and South Anchorage, if you could call it South Anchorage. But that was a long distance. It was quite a span of distance. Mm-hmm. But people have a tendency to congregate where they feel comfortable, and so there wasn't a lot of variety of cultures in Anchorage at the time, is my point.
Yeah, that's very true. Anchorage was very homogenous. Well, thanks, Joe. Good call. Mara, I mean, I think that's true, that we've gone through a change from kind of a I mean, at the time that Joe's talking about, like the average age in Anchorage was like in the 20s, and it was like a lot of construction workers and very, but also very racially homogenous and probably class-wise homogenous too. And over time, I guess we've become more diverse. And does with that go more division, like he's saying?
I think the potential is there, certainly. And I think that we've had episodes of differences. And I think that we need to be really honest with ourselves about that. But also, you know, we just got through about a year-long process of reaching out to different neighborhoods and communities within our city. And the one message that came resoundingly clear is people want the kind of community that Joe just mentioned. They want the kind of community that is welcoming and inclusive and equitable. And people are willing to work with it and put our heads together and think about how we're going to do that. So I think we have a vision of ourselves as a welcoming city, and sometimes we've strayed from that, but we can come back to it as well.
Mm-hmm. How do you bring this about, though? I mean, it seems like you're sort of, you have the position in City Hall, but it's not easy to put that message out there, is it? I mean, what are the sort of, how do you change people's minds, or how do you create those connections?
Well, this process allowed us, like I said, to go out into the communities and get a whole bunch of ideas. And so we have a very brief, easy-to-read report that is up on the city's website. If you go to the Welcoming Anchorage page, you can find the Welcoming Anchorage roadmap. And that was designed with being simplistic in mind. And so what it does is it articulates our values, says that we want to be welcoming. What does that mean for us? And then it identifies different ways that we can achieve that. So, for example, you can look on the economic piece of this roadmap and learn about some of the ideas that people had for mentorships. And so when you're talking about creating mentorships and opportunities to teach each other about opening a small business, that's where the community needs to step up. But there are other things like ensuring that the city is providing language access. So that's a city and a government responsibility. So this report tries to distinguish between what are the opportunities for the community to come together and some ideas around that, but also give the assembly and the mayor some ideas, real specific ideas about what would make these things easier to realize.
Yeah. I mean, kind of coming back to that economic thing again, I sort of think about like cultural dance performances and that sort of thing. But you're talking about like, how does somebody start a small business? How do they get the wherewithal to do it and the knowledge to do it in this community? So that's part of this welcoming thing, is like giving people economic opportunity.
Absolutely. And there's one term that we've come to use a lot. It's called brain waste. And it's this idea that people come to the United States with a whole bunch of skills and experiences, but we have no way of recognizing that in our systems. And so oftentimes you'll get people with master's degrees who are being told to go back and get a GED and start all over again. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing we want to avoid, and we can't afford anymore.
Yeah.
So it's figuring out how we can translate credentials from one country to another. Tasks like that, we know we can do this. We just have to identify it as a goal.
And that benefits everyone.
Exactly.
Because you've got this, all this human potential that's being used.
We have one study that shows that the consumer power in Anchorage from foreign-born Alaskans is $500 million.
Wow. So, Niyakor, you have an African grocery, and did you find that there were some challenges in starting a business here? Did you have all the know-how you needed, or were there some, what were the steps along the way to be able to do that?
The way we do things here, people who migrated were not originally from here. Since we don't know where to go, or some, the people who were born here, they would say, oh, there's grand, there's business startup grand, there's deed. Mm-hmm. And we don't know how to deal with all this paperwork. So we rely on each other, the community. Like in the Somalian community, they will put all the money together and they will go ahead and start a business and everybody will benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
From my personal story, it was very unique that Alaska gave out money every October, which is free money.
The permanent fund, right?
Right. So,
yeah, the look on your face is perfect. So, yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way. Like,
what is that?
So,
one of the Somalian guys who had that store first, and he was moving, or I don't know what's going on, but he decided to, he wanted to sell the place. And and the very place you can go is to ask, hey, the South Sudanese community, don't you guys want to have a business too over here? the Somalians have theirs. You guys should too. And I goes, yeah, of course. How much you want for that? And he goes, well, you can. The rent for the place is like about $1,000. Now it's a little bit up. And then with all everything that is in here, it's about $12,000. I'm like, oh, okay. I think I'm going to get $14,000. So I'll give you the $12,000, and then I'll take the place. Uh-huh. And we agreed. And it was kind of easy transition. Mm-hmm. But if I were to go to the community route, there's also the other that way that we mm-hmm. use.
So what Mary's talking about is like being able to actually access a bank and access the traditional means of doing this.
So yeah. One of the things we're looking at doing, and we're working closely with the Anchorage Community Land Trust on looking at, is how can we create a microfinance fund for small businesses who can't necessarily go a traditional banking route?
Yeah.
What are some of the other financial opportunities that we may be able to create in our city? But alongside that comes this idea of the community coming together and making sure that businesses avoid obvious failures and pitfalls. And so providing people with resources like mentoring, how do you fill out forms, doing all of that stuff, trying to make that easier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to have to take a break here in just a minute. When I come back, I'm going to give out that phone number again for listeners who'd like to get in on our conversation about welcoming Anchorage and Anchorage's diversity. And lots more to talk about racial discrimination and to what extent is that an issue here in Anchorage and how can we deal with that and all the other work that our guest Mara Kimmel is doing to welcome more people to Anchorage and Nea Corquith's experience in coming to Anchorage. My name is Charles Woolforth. Please stick with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. Today we're talking about diversity of Anchorage, immigrant experience here, and welcoming new people to Anchorage and creating a new image of ourselves as this extremely diverse community that we are. The sort of the pioneer image is out of date, and we're trying to figure out what the new image is going to be and how we integrate everybody and sort of work together as a community and take advantage of that economically, socially, culturally, and in every other way. So I've got two guests in the studio, Mara Kimmel, who is the First Lady of Anchorage. Her husband is Mayor Ethan Berkowitz. She is the leader of the Welcoming Anchorage Initiative. And Nea Corquith, who owns the African Market at Boniface and Northern Lights. And she was born in an Ethiopian refugee camp. She's a South Sudanese ethnic person, but is an American citizen and has been here for quite a while and is doing quite well. And so she's part of this whole mosaic that we're talking about. And we would welcome your calls. Are you from somewhere else? Did you feel like Anchorage was welcoming when you came? Are you from Anchorage originally and sort of wondering about these changes that are happening? Are you comfortable with them? What are your concerns, questions, comments on today's topic? The number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. The statewide number is 1-888-353-5752. And you can reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So one thing that has happened through the increase in immigrants in Anchorage is increased racial diversity in Anchorage, more people who look not the same. There are a lot of different kinds of people. And I'm interested from your personal experience, Nea Cor, as an African-American, if you feel like the way you are treated from a racial perspective is the same in Anchorage as compared to Nebraska and New York where you lived before, if Anchorage is in any way better, or if you're able to see a difference in terms of those racial attitudes.
It's a little bit different. I was shocked when I learned that Anchorage is one of the most pretty much diverse community in the United States. I thought New York City was because there's a lot of African from west, from east, everywhere, and different people. We had my first friend was they're from Bosnia. They're also the godparents of my two oldest children.
Oh.
So I never been out there a lot when I was in New York City. I never had to have a reason to look for a job because I was married to a person who have his own business and well-to-do man. So I didn't have the opportunity to find out because I hear it a lot. When people go out there and look for a job, that's when they run into those kind of obstacles.
Those barriers, yeah.
Yeah, and also you come with the education and they will tell you to go back and get a GED or something. You have to go back to school. So I hear that a lot. So in Nebraska, I tried it a little bit, that I can go out there and use my experience from running the business when I was married, see if I can get a job. That didn't work out. So I didn't know what was wrong.
Applying,
decided to just...
Not getting called. And so you never really know, yeah.
I never really know what was happening in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. All I know, most people from my community, they work at the meat factory company.
Mm.
And I don't want to work there. So,
yeah.
So that's when I was able to come here, and I ran into someone in Fred Meyer. And right, I think it was a month after that, I ran into a lady called Barb Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I was able to find good people and was friendly and accepted me for who I am, where I come from.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't, only thing I can put together was Anchorage was far way different, because if Nebraska was better than Anchorage, maybe I could have stayed there and be able to have a better life there. But I find it here.
Yeah, yeah. So. Merrick, do you find that from in your discussions with other non-white immigrants that they have a different experience of race here or not? Or do you have a generalization on that?
I don't necessarily have a generalization in a comparative sense. What I will say is there are structural barriers that keep people out of our mainstreaming economy. Part of that are language barriers, and Neocor just mentioned Barb Jacobs, who runs a language interpreter center program here in the city. And so there's always opportunities for people who are bilingual or multilingual. But again, I think that understanding that agencies and governments have obligations to provide services in a multitude of languages, if those agencies and governments are not doing that, it erects structural barriers that result in institutional racism. It keeps people out of being able to participate fully. And so I think that understanding those kinds of barriers are really important. It also comes into play with public safety issues. And one of the things that the Anchorage Police Department has recently done is it has adopted its own language access policy and has been doing a lot of outreach into immigrant and refugee communities right now to assure people that if they are a victim of a crime, no matter where they're from, what language you speak, or what your skin tone is, you can call, because public safety is the primary goal. Achieving public safety is a primary goal of the Anchorage Police Department. But that has to be a very overt statement, because people don't feel comfortable and safe, either because they come from places like maybe Nebraska or New York, or they come from countries where the government is not to be trusted. So I think we've always got to be aware that there are structural obstacles and institutional racism and barriers that exist. That's a huge part of what we're trying to do at Welcoming Anchorage, is to identify what they are, those institutional barriers are, and take them down.
Right. So those barriers exist, and even though we may congratulate ourselves that we haven't had, you know, racial disturbances over police shootings like many cities in the country, and we haven't had sort of overt problems that have cropped up, that doesn't mean it's easy. That you still,
exactly.
You still have to reach out and deal with those things.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, just to take a step further on this, if an employer says you have to have a college, a high school diploma, and you have to have certain educational qualifications, then how do we deal with that if someone comes in who maybe has an education that is in some way equivalent but is from a totally different system and you don't know what that person knows?
Absolutely. And I'd say that's actually one of the things we're not farthest along on, and we have a lot more work to do. I know that Department of Labor has been looking at reconfiguring the way that people can capture skills on a resume, and the city has been doing the same, so that we're not asking for easy to understand credentials, but more explicit and more descriptive credentials. That's one way. But another way is for Anchorage to engage in what's going on nationally, which are their efforts in a variety of cities to do this sort of equivalency among credentials, so that we can, if a person goes in and wants a job, the employer can take that person's resume and get it basically translated. Mm. So there are services around the country that do that. We haven't yet implemented that in Anchorage, and I think that that's one of the very next steps that we need to do so that we can make sure that people can get into jobs that they're trained to do.
So you mentioned that there's a national program, and so is it called? And are
well,
you able to get resources from that?
It's happening around the nation, but it's not a national program, and that's part of the problem is there's no standards nationwide for how we do this. And so depending on whatever city you're in, it could be very different, or whatever state you're in, it could be very different. But there are national services out there that an individual can say, hey, can you translate my resume into American? What would this look like in an American system? And so a person could find that. But again, these services are not widely known, and the city government and city employers are probably not availing themselves of this yet. So this is another piece of the education process that we're undertaking.
So your feeling is that they're missing out on a great human resource out there where they could be getting good employees who could do a great job, but because of paperwork and cultural barriers, they're not considering them.
Yeah, and we've done studies in the city to show that most immigrants who are in our city have some level of higher education. So the immigrant education level as an average is actually higher in Anchorage than the education level for refugees, which is different in every city. So you look at Detroit and you look at the Syrian refugees that have come in, most of those folks have fled with advanced degrees. Hmm. We don't have Syrian refugees here yet, and I'm not sure we will ever get them. But you have to look at the skill sets and understand that people come with full lives into our community.
Right. Well, something you just said sparked my curiosity. You say we may not get Syrian refugees. Who determines who's coming here? I mean, it seems like in Neocor's case, it was just like a relative said, why don't you come here? And in other cases, it seems like there's actually a channel to bring people here.
I don't think in Neocor's case a relative said that. I think that they went through an extensive 2.5 year at minimum, and I think you had said 5 years?
Up to four to five years.
4 to 5 years. You were in the camps.
No, I mean specifically in Anchorage. She came from Nebraska.
But that was not a formal refugee program.
I agree, right. Yeah. I'm saying that many of immigrants who are here, probably the majority, have come from another place within the United States. At least for my research, it seems like people are coming from Minneapolis, they're coming from other communities around the country. But then there's also an official process which determines who can come here, which is a much smaller flow and a pretty...
It is. Yeah. So, and that official process applies to... They're called refugees, and that's actually a legal term of art. So you have to go through a refugee camp, and then the U.S. government, in conjunction with the United Nations, decides where you're going. Mm-hmm. The immigration just happens. And yes, like you said, it's usually because you have a family member here or because there are job opportunities. Alaska has a very longstanding Filipino community because those folks came up here and have been working in the fishing industry for centuries, probably.
And I think from talking to Professor Farrell, that it was either he or someone else who told me that for the most part, that folks arrive in Anchorage after they've already landed somewhere else. So they're maybe in an immigrant community in another part of the country, and they find out opportunities are great in Alaska, and they maybe follow family up here.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at Kodiak Island, too, and there's a big population of Salvadorans. We have a large Hmong population. Just in my own questioning of people who are here within the Hmong community, I think we have like the third highest per capita population of Hmong anywhere in the country, and it is because people have family here. A couple of folks came, realized they could have jobs, like Nyakor was describing, it's easier to get work, or it historically has been. So that's what draws people.
Yeah. It's Hometown Alaska. We are talking about Welcome Anchorage, immigrants, new people coming to Anchorage. And I guess the program also is talking about all kinds of people, not only immigrants. My guests are Mara Kimmel, who is the head of this program, and her husband is the mayor of Anchorage, and Nyakor Kwith, who is originally from, I guess was born in Ethiopia, but she was a refugee from South Sudan, and now has lived in the United States for quite a while and is an American citizen. Nyakor, I'm sure you are in touch with a lot of new people coming here, and what do you find are the biggest difficulties they have? What are the things that are the most important barriers or problems that could make their entry into Anchorage easier if we could change anything about Anchorage?
The first barrier that comes on top of mind is housing.
Housing.
Mm-hmm. And also transportation can be easily figured out because there's bus, but housing is a big issue. Like now, that I think 3 years ago, we started getting refugees directly from camp.
Mm-hmm.
Come here. So I don't know how the Catholic family service deal with it, but that is the biggest issue with them. I saw a family a few weeks ago. Even now, there is a family that are dealing with that issue after their service is done with the Catholic, and now they are being handed to the city or to the state, and the state have to find them housing. Because the employment or the job she have will not pay the rent.
Yes.
So that is the biggest.
I found the same thing in talking to recent immigrants is that you can get a job, you know, cleaning a church or an office or whatever, but a lot of jobs in Anchorage that are at that lower level simply will not pay enough to live. And so if you go to the food bank and see people getting food, many of them, or most of them, are actually employed, and they just simply can't afford food.
That's right.
Yeah. So, Mara, is that something, is there a way to deal with that? I mean, other than the fact that obviously we would love for housing to be less expensive, is that something you guys are talking about?
Yeah, definitely. I think that the city has been doing a lot to work with groups like Cook and the Housing Authority and others to figure out how to make housing much more affordable and accessible. We have a housing coordinator at the city. But it's a slow road, and obviously there are urgent needs to be dealt with, and so it's really something that's very sad.
Yeah, well, to me it feels like it's a problem of the cost of housing not outstripping the income, and so income hasn't gone up for the lower level folks. Wages haven't gone up. When I wrote an article about this, a column about this recently, I got into a long debate with somebody who said, "Like, it's my fault. I can't pay more than my competitors for wages," and yet what he was paying was really not enough to live on, and so that's kind of a problem with our whole culture. I don't know how we deal with that. Probably not going to deal with it today, but I think we need to acknowledge it, right?
That's right.
Yeah, Nyakor's nodding too. All right, Karen from Eagle River, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I just want to thank you so much. This has been really interesting to me to hear how adults are being welcomed into our community, because I work on the other end of the age spectrum. I welcome the babies. I sign up new babies to receive Dolly Parton Imagination Library, which is a program that is under the umbrella of Best Beginnings Alaska here. And what it does is send a book a month until the baby's 5 years old to every preschooler that signs up, no requirements of any sort, where you came from, where you live, how much money you have, nothing. But they're wonderful classic children's books. And about half of the births in Anchorage seem, in my estimation, to be to people whose first language isn't English. And that may be a high estimation. But my point that I want to make is when you see or hear or have an opportunity to talk to someone who doesn't speak good English, don't stop. Just slow down. Just listen more slowly. It's not as hard to communicate as you think when you look someone in the eye and maybe make a sign of some sort and connections can be made on a very simple, very basic level. And I think welcoming the kids in with books is a wonderful way to do it.
Well, Karen, that's a great comment.
I get those books, too.
Yeah. Oh, do you get the books?
I get those books, and they've been very helpful.
Oh, that's great.
Now I don't have to go out there and buy books because I receive them. I had two children here, and I'm getting them every month now. They're two books, so we have lots of books to read.
Oh, that's neat.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great. I love that connection.
That's a wonderful program, and thank you for doing that so much. And one thing I want to point out, too, is I think that oftentimes, you know, in the United States, we are monoliterate. Most of us don't speak more than English. And I think to recognize that being biliterate or multilingual is something, it's a skill and an asset. And a lot of times the conversation around immigrants and refugees is, why don't they speak English and why aren't they learning English? And there are statistics out there that show it takes 8 years to gain mastery of another language as an adult. But also we need to change the way we think about this. We need to see this literacy as an asset in our economy, that when we're growing up kids who can speak more than one language, we're then able to send out ambassadors, economic ambassadors, to the rest of the world, and that only enhances our growth potential here at home. So we really need to start seeing language as an asset much more than we've been doing.
Interesting. Was language ever a challenge for you, Niyakar, or for your family?
Oh, yeah. I think it took me 5 years.
Really?
You're fast.
Yeah.
And how did you do it?
Because I went through the, because when I, coming from Ethiopia, they teach English, but it's not like the teacher will stand there and teach English. All the material would be in English, but the lecture would be in Amharic. So I've learned Amharic more than English. Mm. So you come here, we can read fluently, we can understand, but you can't speak it, which makes it very difficult. So I had to go through the ESL program. And it's a lot of work, but you can get there.
Yeah, difficult.
Yeah.
Do we have a lot of that kind of instruction happening here in Anchorage, Mara?
We have the Anchorage Literacy Program, which does an admirable job at trying to reach out to as many ESL folks as possible. We've got a great program at the school district with the English language learners and the Welcoming Center at the school district. We've got incredible opportunities for Anchorage kids to learn more than one language because we have so many great immersion programs throughout mm-hmm. the city. We have one of the few dual immersion programs for Spanish kids, Spanish language kids. So we have incredible language opportunities.
Tell people what that means.
So at Government Hill, which is the school that my kids have gone to, there's a requirement that the immersion program host half kids from native Spanish-speaking homes and half from native English-speaking homes. And normally, immersion programs are one way, so you just throw 100% of the classroom who speaks English, say, for example, into a German-speaking classroom, and there's no vice versa there. Mm-hmm. So these are great opportunities because as an English-speaking parent, I got to watch the transition of a kid who spoke only Spanish and become fluent in English, and I understood in a different way what my kid was experiencing mm-hmm. then, going through that, but the opposite direction. So we put a great premium on language and on diversity, and I think that just a lot of the purpose of welcoming Anchorage is to make sure that we're all aware of that and embracing it and moving it forward.
So how did that work out for your kids? Did they become fluent in Spanish? And did they give up anything in terms of their other academics because they were trying to learn in a foreign language?
No, it was the most, and it still is the most rewarding program. And there's a funny story about when we were in Nicaragua and we got pulled over by the police, and my daughter was able to translate for me and tell me what the police were saying, and then I could use my lawyer's Spanish to get us out of trouble. But these things it's an amazing asset, and my kids are both going to go into college being bilingual and have job opportunities that then free them up. So if they wanted to be artists or photographers or whatever, they could do that, and then they could interpret. Having language skills is an economic asset and an economic benefit, not only for them, but for the communities that they'll live in, not even to mention the cultural benefits that arise from it.
For all of us, absolutely. Caroline, did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, real quickly. First of all, I'd like to echo what that lady just said. I've told teenagers that maybe aren't that fluent or don't really
value their original language or their parents' original language, and said, you know, that's like having a master's degree.
Right. Hang on to it, right.
Yeah, absolutely. My point had to do with little kids, and even up to 12-year-old, that area. I lived in Samoa many years ago, and I would ask a little child, I'd say, what does such and such mean? And they took such pride in being able to tell me, and I know from my own kids who are now grown, that they enjoyed teaching me something. Mm-hmm. So I think for us to engage in the younger children and just let them know we don't know, and how do they pronounce such and such, and that sort of thing. Let them teach us.
Yeah. Well, the next generation is, that's always a big part of the immigrant experience, is the next generation grows up fluent in English, grows up fluent in the culture and in the schools. And sometimes that can create a conflict between the parent and the kid, as the parent is sort of still living a little bit in the culture of the old country and the kid is sort of transitioning. Have you seen that, Niyakor?
That's something we are working with. We are trying to figure out how we can deal with that now, with the help from the mayor's office, with Amy Coffin, who's helping the South Sudanese community, women here in Anchorage. What will happen is when children spend most of their day in school, they come home, mom is at work, dad is at work, they come home, watch TV, the disconnection started. Mm-hmm. So the kids, they don't speak their native language, and the mom does not speak English, so they became separate people.
Yeah.
They don't communicate. Even the parent-teacher conference, parent will not go because they don't know when that is taking place. Mm-hmm. And now the kid have an opportunity to explore different activities.
Which may not be good, yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of big challenges. Anyway, anything that we just have about a minute left. Anything you want to leave listeners with, Mara, how can people get involved with this? And what are the activities that folks could participate in who would support your mission?
Well, if you want to get involved, we would love to have you, anybody and everybody. And so you can go on the Welcoming Anchorage webpage, which is on the municipal webpage, and there's actually sign-up sheets for the different projects that we've got going. So I would encourage you to get on the webpage and look at what we're doing and sign up for anything that interests you. We need everybody. We would love to have everybody's opinions and ideas.
And even if you don't want to, like, do something, you can come to one of these events, like the ones you have at the library.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have Tradition Tuesday every month. There are Welcoming Week activities every year. We are trying to highlight and really bring each other out into the community to share.
Yeah. Just be aware, we live in an international community. You don't have to buy a plane ticket and go overseas. You can meet people, learn about these things without going anywhere. So super cool. And I know I've really enjoyed meeting people in the South Sudanese community at my guest Niyakor Quest's market over there in Northern Lights and Boniface. It's been really an eye-opening opportunity for me. Thanks so much for being here, Niyakor.
Thank you for having me.
And Mara Kimmel, thank you for being here, and thank you for leading Welcoming Anchorage.
Thank you, Charles.
All right. Well, you've heard all that, and I hope you will check it out. Next week on Hometown Alaska, we're going to be talking about energy. A report has recently been completed looking at the alternative energy opportunities and energy conservation opportunities in Anchorage, something we can all get involved in, all contribute to as citizens. My name is Charles Wolforth. Eric Bork was our producer today. Thanks for joining us, Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.